This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tom Chikich. There's been more than 207,000 COVID-19-related deaths with more than 3 million infections globally. In the United States, more than 55,000 people have died with nearly 1 million infections. As Italy prepares to emerge from the West's first and most extensive coronavirus lockdown, it is increasingly clear that something went terribly wrong in Lombardy, the hardest-hit region in Europe's hardest-hit country. Italy was the first Western nation to be slammed by the outbreak, and its official total number of fatalities lags behind only the U.S. and the global death toll. Italy's first homegrown case was recorded February 21st at a time when the World Health Organization was still insisting the virus was containable and not nearly as infectious as the flu. But there is also evidence that demographics and health care deficiencies collided with political and business interest to expose the 10 million people in the northern Italian region of Lombardy to COVID-19 in ways unseen anywhere else, particularly the most vulnerable in nursing homes. Virologists and epidemiologists say that what went wrong there will be studied for years, given how the outbreak overwhelmed the medical system long considered one of Europe's best, while in the neighboring region the impact was significantly more controlled. Chinese health authority said Monday that it received reports of three new confirmed COVID-19 cases on the mainland Saturday, of which two were imported and one in another province. No deaths were reported Sunday on the mainland. That's according to the National Health Commission in a daily report, adding that there were five new suspected cases, four imported, one in Beijing. According to the commission, 80 patients were discharged from the hospital. After recovery, 508 people were discharged from medical observation, while the number of severe cases increased by 1 to 52 on Sunday. This is VOA News. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson returned to his Downing Street residence on Sunday after recovering from COVID-19, set to take the helm again with pressure growing for the government to explain how it will ease a month-old coronavirus lockdown. 55-year-old Johnson spent three nights in intensive care with the illness. A spokeswoman confirmed he was back at 10 Downing Street Sunday evening after 2 weeks recovering at his country residence. Johnson is expected to announce plans for easing a month-old coronavirus lockdown as early as this week after he returned to Downing Street Sunday night, according to The Telegraph. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani Sunday revealed plans to reopen parts of the country that have been consistently free of the coronavirus outbreak as restrictions on Iranians gradually ease. Iran, one of the Middle Eastern countries hardest hit by the pandemic, will be divided up into white, yellow, and red regions based on the number of infections and deaths. Activities in each region will be restricted accordingly, so an area that has been consistently free of infections or deaths will be labeled white. Mosque could be reopened with Friday prayers resuming. The United States has again demanded that Afghanistan's feuding leaders and the Taliban insurgency set internal disputes aside and cease armed violence to focus on combating the coronavirus pandemic. American peace envoy to the country, Zalmay Khalilzad, made the call Sunday through a series of tweets to wish Afghans happy Muslim fasting month of Ramadan. Khalilzad emphasized the well-being of the Afghan people and the country itself depend on all parties devoting their full energies to the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic, the shared enemy of all. Khalilzad said that Ramadan, which began on Friday, offered Afghan President Ghani and his political rival Abdullah Abdullah the opportunity to put their interests of the country ahead of their own. Both the rival leaders claimed they've won the September 28th presidential election and held competing inauguration ceremonies last month. The political crisis paralyzed national governance just when a U.S. negotiated peace-building agreement with the Taliban had raised hopes for finding a negotiated end to years of hostilities in Afghanistan. Saudi Arabia's King Salman has ordered an end to the death penalty for crimes committed by minors. That is according to a statement Sunday by a top official. That decision comes on the heels of another ordering judges to end the practice of flogging and said substituting jail time, fines, or community service. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon frees thousands of prisoners to slow coronavirus spread.
With this release, we'll be able to apply very strictly that aspect of social distancing, even within the prison.
Liberia's first coronavirus case will discuss his experiences and recovery. The chair of Lesotho's ruling ABC Legislative Caucus says he is still the leader of that body. An Eswatini journalist will discuss press freedom in the Southern African Kingdom. And a spokesperson says Malawi's president is enjoying good health despite claims on social media that he is suffering from fatigue.
I can confirm to you that His Excellency the President, Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika, is enjoying good health. There is absolutely no questions about his health.
Ngemi Kalilani is a spokesperson for Malawian President Arthur Peter Mutharika. And gender parity remains a pie in the sky for Zimbabwean women. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Thousands of Cameroonian prisoners have regained their freedom as ordered by President Paul Biya after his government reported that the coronavirus pandemic was spreading and inmates were among the groups with the highest level of exposure. The government, however, has not provided the number of infected inmates, but says more than 1,500 people have tested positive for COVID-19 in less than 2 months, with over 50 deaths. Moki Edwin Kizika reports from Yaoundé.
Speaking via a messaging application from Cameroon's English-speaking northwestern town of Bamenda, Henry Asangu, superintendent of the Bamenda Central Prison, says the 138 inmates who have regained their freedom were all tested COVID-19 free. He says their departure makes it possible for prison staff to ensure that compliance with principles of hygiene is effective to check the spread of the coronavirus.
With this release, we'll be able to apply very strictly that aspect of social distancing, even within the prison.
Cameroon has 78 overcrowded prisons with 30,000 prisoners in detention facilities constructed for a maximum of 9,000 inmates. Among the 1,400 who have regained their freedom is Emmanuel Ngumba. He says he was arrested 2 years ago at 16 and held at the Boya Central Prison.
I left the house one evening to go and see a friend. He said he wanted us to go and pick some things from his uncle's shop. When they took some gas bottles and engine oil, so they caught me. Prison is not a good place.
Ngumba, who spoke via a messaging application, said his rights were abused because he was accused of theft and detained in prison for 2 years without trial. 52-year-old Pierre Chamba also regained his freedom after more than 24 years in the Betwa prison, where he was given a life sentence for voluntary manslaughter and aggravated theft.
This has been Katmo prison.
Chamba says after 24 years and 4 months of detention in inhumane conditions, he has finally regained his freedom thanks to COVID-19, which has been spreading in Cameroon and infecting inmates. On April 15, President Biya ordered the release of thousands of prisoners over concerns about congested facilities spreading the coronavirus. However, separatists fighting for an independent English-speaking state in the Central African nation and officials jailed for corruption were excluded. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
On March 16, Liberian President George Weah addressed the nation and announced that the head of the country's Environmental Protection Agency, Nathaniel Blama, was the first confirmed case of the coronavirus. The president later suspended Blama from his position. Since then, there have been 121 confirmed COVID-19 cases in Liberia. But Blama and several others have recovered from the virus. Mr. Blama spoke with reporter Moses Gaziewu about
about his experiences as the nation's first confirmed coronavirus case and his subsequent recovery.
First of all, I feel restored. I feel like a human again. And being reunited with your family, friends and loved ones, there's nothing more exciting about that. And there's not much you can compare to that.
Tell me about the moment it was announced that Nat Blama is Liberia's indexed case of the COVID-19 virus.
Well, honestly, I didn't think it would go that well. I thought it would be within our borders to deal with. And I did think it through before I requested the test. When I requested the test, I thought it through deep in deep, you know, and knew that worst case scenario, if I'm tested positive, there'll be a time when everybody will be calling me. And knowing our society, I know people react to things differently. But I didn't think it would go global.
Tell me, how did you contract the virus? What moment can you remember that you came in contact with someone infected?
Actually, Moses, I was in Europe for 4 days. There was no way I would have known how I contracted the virus. I like to use two analogies. One, the virus for me is like a bullet. It hits you before you know you got the bullet in you. The second analogy is the virus is like when you breathe. 30 minutes ago, where did you breathe the air? You breathed. You don't know. And so I don't remember coming across anybody with heavy coughing, sneezing. I don't remember coming across anybody symptomatic. I was extremely careful.
That moment when the president announced that you were the first case, there were a lot of issues associated. He said you invaded health protocol at the airport as an official of government. Was that the case?
Well, I don't want to go into the rudimentaries of fending and proving or establishing who says what. One thing I can say to everyone is I went in sick and came back well. I think to me that's the story, that's the success story that we all need to promulgate out there. The president acted in the right wisdom, because when you are in the hot seat, you have to take a decision. So even the decision to suspend me, I accept that in good faith, because that was the circumstance that required.
Nathaniel Blama is the suspended head of the Liberian Environmental Protection Agency and the first confirmed case of the COVID-19 virus in Liberia. He was speaking with reporter Moses Gaziewu in Monrovia. A spokesperson says Malawian President Arthur Peter Mutharika is enjoying good health and carrying on his official duties as usual. Rumors spreading on social media over the weekend said the president may not be able to run in the coming July 2nd court order presidential election rerun because he was suffering from fatigue. But presidential spokesperson Mgeme Kalilani says the opposition alliance of Malawi Congress Party and the United Transformation Movement Party was behind the rumors after their criticism of the government's coronavirus measures was debunked by the World Health Organization.
I can confirm to you that His Excellency the President, Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika, is enjoying good health. There is absolutely no questions about his health. I was talking to him just a couple of minutes ago. He's still in his office working, and he has quite a number of meetings to hold tomorrow. So absolutely nothing to worry about the president's health.
Where do you think the rumors circulating on social media about the president's health are coming from?
Well, James, the rumors about President Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika being sick are coming from the opposition propaganda media team. In our reading of the situation on the social media about these stories is that the opposition is trying to use that story to cover themselves up for embarrassment that they suffered last week. If you've been following our situation in the country, is that for the past 3 weeks, the opposition in Malawi, my Congress Party and the UTM and their political proxy, HRDC, have been running a campaign to discredit the COVID-19 pandemic fight being led by government in the country by saying that all the coronavirus positive cases that the government of Malawi has been announcing were made up cases. They've been using the social media and other platforms to peddle a lie that the president of His Excellency, the President Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika, was trying to use those cases to push for postponement of the presidential election ordered by the Constitutional Court back in February. Much to their disappointment, last Friday, there was a press conference held jointly by the WHO, the Malawi Minister of Health, and the Center for Disease Control, at which issues surrounding the COVID cases that Malawi has were explained. And during that meeting, the WHO explained categorically that the results that are being announced by the Minister of Health in Malawi are authentic, and the WHO said it clearly that all the results are verified scientifically, and the WHO also said that the results follow a laid down internationally accepted scientific process for them to be authenticated.
When last was the presidency in public?
His Excellency the President Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika was last seen in public last Wednesday.
Mgemi Kalilani is spokesperson for Malawian President Arthur Peter Mutharika. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, April 27. In Lesotho, the chair of the ruling All Basotho Convention ABC Party's Legislative Caucus says he is still the leader of that body. Feko Moshoeshoe was reportedly removed as caucus chair for backing Mbatho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane. Mr. Thabane has been under increasing pressure to resign following the murder of his estranged wife, for which he and his current wife are said to be involved. Over the weekend, South African mediators reportedly proposed for the Prime Minister to be given a dignified retirement. Feko Moshoeshoe blames those he called renegades and anarchists bent on killing the party after they had been removed from their ministerial positions by the Prime Minister.
According to our ABC constitution, in the first place, once you've been chosen as a chairperson, you'll be there as a chairperson until the caucus decide otherwise. So this came to my surprise when some people, which I can call them the renegades, which I can call them the anarchists, I don't know why these people have decided to come on board talking about this issue of I'm no more a chairperson. In fact, I don't have a problem with anything that MPs are deciding to do. But the first thing which they're supposed to do, they have to inform me, so that they have to inform the leader. That's according to the constitution of ABC.
As you know, the Prime Minister is under pressure from within his own ABC party to step down. Where do you stand on the demand for the Prime Minister to step down?
Unfortunately, the guys which are from the other side, when you know we're being divided into factions, the guys who were on the other side trying to fire, even try to insult the new committee which was being elected by the Congress of ABC. Let me tell you a thing about these people. Immediately after they are aware that Prime Minister have just decided to remove them to the ministerial position, now they have started this. In fact, I'm aware what's going on. There are people which are trying to kill our movement. They're killing ABC. They are trying to destroy the movement. We are not going to allow them. What we need is this. Even the guys which we think now they're controlling the Prime Minister, they are next to him. We are going to tell them that no, this is enough. We are united as ABC MPs. Except one and two and three people, which most of the guys who were the ministers before. Even when he decided to fire them, I don't know. Is the Prime Minister who can tell us why he has decided to die, but he's not even in a position to be asked those kind of things.
Are you aware of a proposal apparently made by South African negotiators to give Prime Minister Thabane a dignified exit?
Yes, the Prime Minister has announced himself that he wants to retire because he's tired. He's even just told us by the end of July he's going to do that. I'm supporting the people who are saying we should release Tom Prime Minister in a very respective way. When someone has been a leader, most especially a founder of All Basotho Convention, so definitely we have to respect him, even if we have challenges while he has gone, so that we can be able to invite him to come and give us an advice. I don't like these kind of things that they are persuading him to go by tomorrow. That to me is very unfair. Let's give him a chance. Let's reassure him. Let's make him comfortable. Because he has volunteered to resign. He's the first leader in Africa to do that. But the way that I see things are being done, really, this is going to give us a chaos. You want to see him relaxing, playing with kids, doing whatever. Anytime that you want to invite me, anytime during his birthday, so that we can celebrate together like other people which have been doing that in so many countries. Yes, I want the Dr. Thabane to step down, but in a respectful manner, in a way that he will feel that he has built ABC, he has made sure that ABC is a powerful movement now. Why do we have to treat him like this?
Feko Moshoeshoe is the Embattled Chair of the ruling All Basotho Convention ABC Legislative Caucus. You are speaking with us from the capital, Maseru. It appears journalists in Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, are coming under more pressure during the coronavirus crisis for writing what authorities call negative articles about King Mswati III. This month, Eswatini police detained former Times Eswatini journalist Eugene Dube for writing negative things about the king, a crime considered high treason in Eswatini. Zuele Martin Dlamini is editor of the Swaziland News. He is in hiding after he too was declared wanted by the police for questioning. He spoke with us from an undisclosed location about press freedom in Eswatini.
It's true that independent journalists in Swaziland are under extreme attack, particularly those who are critical of the absolute monarchy. You will recall that Eswatini is a constitution that guarantees media freedom, but it is regarded a criminal offense to criticize the king. Criticism directed to the king is treated as a seditious, maybe I would say treasonous by the law enforcement agency. And what made the situation worse is the fact that the media organization that should be defending the right to information and freedom of the press were captured by the state. So it's very tough.
Now let's talk about you specifically. We understand you are currently out of the country. Why did you leave the country?
Even though I cannot disclose where I am right now, James, the truth of the matter is that I'm currently in hiding within the Sadak region after the police received an order to assassinate me for writing critical articles about the king. It started on the 25th of February this year. The police raided my home and subsequently took me to the police station where I was tortured, suffocated. Obviously, this was in relation of a series of articles that I wrote about the king and published in the Swaziland News. I was then advised by other international journalists, James, particularly the Committee to Protect Journalists based in New York, to prioritize safety while efforts were being made to make sure that the publishing continues.
What can you tell us about journalist Eugene Dube?
Eugene Dube is a freelance journalist for our publication, the Swaziland News, and is a highly, highly talented journalist, James. He sustained some injuries after a battalion of armed police officers raided his home in Hlangan in the southern parts of Swaziland on Thursday. The information I have is that he was accused of publishing critical articles about the king and was subsequently held before a magistrate, if I recall, on the same day, where the police tried to convince him to confess to high treason. But what he did, James, he asked the court to allow him to seek services of a lawyer, and he was released. And what we're trying now to do is to make sure that he receives legal services so that he can defend himself if the need arises.
Zuele Martin Dramini is an Eswatini journalist speaking with us from an undisclosed location. Despite a progressive constitution that promotes equality among women and men in Zimbabwe, parity remains a pie in the sky for females, Rutendo Maweri reports from Harare.
While Women's Affairs Community Small and Medium Enterprises Development Minister Stembe Sonyon says government is doing all it can to empower women, women in Zimbabwe disagree. Human rights activist Sunga Nojare Wanashe says they've nothing to celebrate as they mark International Women's Month. Jare Wanashe says the Constitution seeks to promote gender equality, but implementation is lacking and women are still locked out from decision-making positions.
Was some known that there is a constitution and there is Section 70 that backs the women, Section 56, Section 80, all those sections in the Constitution are supporting women, but it's just a quarter of the package that women want. Let us start with the presidium. No women in the presidium. Women are relegated to smaller posts, and some of the posts are useless. Even in the parliament, the ratio is not 50-50 as it is written in the constitution. So we cannot say we are empowered. There is no empowerment at all.
Jare Wanashe adds that government has not shown the will to implement the constitution to ensure equality.
We are lamenting. Men don't want with their post. They don't want to share with us. Though the constitution is telling, is mandating the government to make sure that Section 17 is implemented, Section 56, Section 80, and other sections that empower women.
Virginia Mwanigwa, Chief Executive Officer of the Zimbabwe Gender Commission, concurs.
We celebrate as a country, as Zimbabwe, the adoption of a constitution, a progressive constitution that outlines clearly the issue of gender equality and non-discrimination, that spells out clearly, unambiguously, that men, women, girls and boys in Zimbabwe are equal and there's nobody who is less of a citizen than another.
Mwanigwa says the Gender Commission worries about the lack of implementation of the Constitution's provision on equality and pleaded with government to speedily implement them.
But what we then find as a challenge is that in practice this is not being done, because if you go into the arena of politics and decision making, we still see a lot of disparities in terms of who's represented, who's making decisions.
A female president of LEAD, a minor opposition political party, Linda Masarira, urges women to fight for power.
It will take the women themselves to shake off gender stereotypes, to shake off looking down upon other women, because we, the women, have got the power to ensure that we live in an equal world.
Human rights organizations in the country have said gender inequality is still rife. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
Break Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Kenya, where the Kenya Premier League will remain suspended for at least the next 3 weeks after the country's government announced an extension on the coronavirus curfew. President Uhuru Kenyatta confirmed on Saturday that the East African country will extend their current restrictions by a further 21 days to help slow the spread of COVID-19. The league CEO, Jack Ogunda, said with the postponement, the earliest the KPL could return is in mid-May, and the option of the season being abandoned is one which will be considered. Staying with Kenya, FIFA has given the Football Kenya Federation a few more days to clear the debt owed to former coach Adel Amorushi. The Football Kenya Federation was ordered to pay Amorushi over $1 million by the Court of Arbitration for Sport last October after the Belgian gaffer reported a wrongful dismissal from his job as a head coach in 2014. He was sacked just 18 months into a 5-year tenure following a 1-0 aggregate loss to Lesotho in the 2015 African Cup of Nations qualifier. And now to Egypt, where the head of the Egyptian Football Association's Competitions Committee admitted to the difficulty of completing the domestic season, but said he still hopes a solution could be found before it's too late. Football in the country has been suspended since mid-March due to the coronavirus pandemic, with just half the season played. With almost 150 matches still left to play in the Egyptian Premier League, Hassan Elzanati said resuming the competition will face several obstacles. Ivory Coast legend Didier Drogba has suffered a setback in his bid to become the next president of the Ivorian Football Federation after he garnered 0 votes from members of the Association of Former Ivorian Footballers. Drogba is vying for the post, which is held by President Augustin Sidi Diallo. Didier Drogba will have another chance to get the endorsements he needs when members of the Active Footballers Association, the coaches, referees and the physios also cast their votes. Elsewhere in Ghana, football administration in that country has come under scrutiny as football club owner Wilfred Kwaku Osai says there has not been any improvement in the affairs of Ghana football under new president Kurt Okraku. Kwaku Osai, who was disqualified from contesting the GFA presidential election, which saw Okraku come into office in October 2019, says nothing has changed under the new administration 6 months on.
Occasionally, look at what is happening on the FA. strongly indicates that my very good friend Kete Kweku is not having a smooth sailing. So many decisions that have been taken that are debatable.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, April 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you will have a great week.